All right, I'm recording. Are you recording?
I am recording. I've got the squiggles.
I think they have a pill for that now.
Something. Oops. Oops or obs?
Boops and bops. Skibbity-doo, bippity-boo, boppity-boo. Oh, shit. Hold on. My notes are on the other computer. I gotta transfer them. Too many computers.
Too many computers.
Let's do this.
If you're playing the theme, I hear nothing.
Oh, right. Hold on.
We're on, boys!
Welcome, dear listener, to the QQ Cast. Today is... See, Ruli made me stop mid-sentence so I could share my audio, and I wasn't ready. I should redo the whole intro, but I'm not going to. Thursday, March 28th, 2024. We're your hosts, Tom DuPont and Raul Torres. Say, where's Zachary?
Donde está Zachariah?
See, he is putting out fires somewhere else in the world, apparently. Oh, him and his global uptime. You say sci-fi
so
fires?
So many fires. So many fires.
So many fires. Oh, okay, got ya. All right. And this, dear listener, is Quest 324. Ruli, I handpicked this just for you. Bring it in. Get close to that mic.
You picked it?
I did.
Or did I suggest it and you thought it was
a good idea? No. Ruli. When does horror work for you?
Oh, all the time. Good night, folks. See you later.
Oh, damn it. Let me do the hold on. Where's the fake outro? I need to find the fake outro. Where the hell is the fake outro? There it is. Okay. Now that's where you do your bit. Too late. Yeah, man. Look, you're the horror aficionado, and we don't talk a ton of horror because I'm not a big horror guy. And so I figured, hey, you know what? We're doing a duet tonight. It's just you and I. Let's get intimate. Let's turn the lights down low, pull something out in the dark, and scare the shit out of each other.
Okay, that works for me.
All right. So I've got some notes here. Basically, I have some examples of times that horror does work for me, and they are pretty few, pretty far between. And so, look, man, I need your help. Not only do I want to talk about the type of horror that you like, and I want you to educate me, but also I would need your help to articulate why some of these things work for me. I'm weird. Only some horror works for me. And I feel like I'm going to sound like a fucking grade schooler going, well, the horror works here because the horror is actually just a metaphor for something. Like, I feel like I'm going to be a fucking grade schooler, and I need you to help me articulate these things. Are you up to that challenge?
Yeah, of course.
All right.
Easy peasy.
All right, man. Well, cool. I've got my little list. We'll alternate. I don't want to spend too much time in any one of these. We got plenty to go through. So the first one is a movie we actually referenced recently. The director had done something cool. And then you said, oh, he also did this movie. I'm like, oh, I like that movie. That is The Descent.
The Descent. Okay.
So this is probably the most horror-ass horror movie on my entire list. This is the most horror-ass horror movie on my entire list. And I don't know how to express why it worked for me. Like, the first part of the movie is super slow. Like, the first 15 minutes, you're like, what are you watching, these girls in the woods? What the fuck's going on here? Is this going to turn into, like, an asylum film? And then you get into the cave, and I was getting claustrophobic, right? Like, I was literally having to get up off the couch and walk around because it was like, ooh, I was feeling tight. And it was playing on a real phobia, not a jump scare, not some, you know, supernatural, like, no, like, ooh, I was feeling the claustrophobia. And then, of course, shit hits the goddamn fan and the monsters show up and you got jump scares and unrealistic bullshit and rivers of blood and ice picks and people betraying each other, blah, 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 blah. So I don't know why. This was horror. I'm not usually good with straight up horror, but this one worked for me. Is it because it eased me into it with the other shit before it went batshit crazy? I guess batshit, pun intended, with the caves. Like, what was it about The Descent that worked? Because I know you also like this flick.
Yeah. So I think exactly what you said with the character development thing, right? I think I would probably maybe put this in like slasher territory just a little bit, just because of the way that they're mutants. I guess we never established what they are. The cave monsters, right? Kind of go through the cast of characters one by one, yada, yada, yada. But yeah, it's not like your standard kind of movie where you get the tropes to represent certain, you know, people, the jock, the whatever, the final girl. I think it's you get to know the characters a little bit, you know the drama between them, And I think that adds up to you rooting for or wanting people to just, you know, be killed off.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. And although, ironically, I can only remember the two lead characters. I can't remember all their friends that are in the cave with them. But yeah, I don't know. I guess that slow burn at the start makes the rest work. I don't know. Not a great description. All right, man. Over to you. What's a horror film that works for you? Aside from all of them, which we've already covered.
Okay, I'll try to go through different genres, but I'll do the easy one first. Just because of what I was mentioning with all the tropes and stuff. I'll start with Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, that's so good. You know, I actually, earlier today, when I was thinking about this topic, I meant to put that on my list and I didn't do it. Yes, Cabin in the Woods, go.
Yeah, because it plays with the whole tropes that folks know and love, kind of sets up this environment, and then goes completely topsy-turvy on the kind of like root cause of stuff. Because I think one of the really interesting parts of horror as a whole is that sometimes you need to just have that suspension of disbelief and just go like, oh, there's this big bad, there's no motivation, it's going to make things happen. And I think by like trying to be smart enough to make things follow the tropes but then diverge for them, but also kind of make the big bad kind of this like meta, oh, this explains all the horror movies you've ever seen type thing, was really fun.
Yeah, that movie to me, I would describe it more as a deconstruction of horror movies than a horror movie. Because you're right, they lean into the tropes. It's almost corny to the extent that they lean into them, but they do take it, they play it very straight in the first half of the movie. And then the further it goes, so even though, again, they're leaning in so hard that it is almost comedic, it is played so straight and so well that it's working until they pull out the rug out from under you and you're like, oh God, I mean, the monsters are real, but none of this is fucking real.
Is this the first movie that has Chekhov's mermaid? Is that a thing?
It is now. Is Chekhov a Russian sailor? Because, yeah, great.
You know what I'm referring to, right?
No, go on.
Oh, so one of the funniest scenes that I think, I'm trying to remember when this movie came out, like if screen caps were a thing or not. But if you remember at some point, like the whatever secret society is at a board, and they're trying to figure out what is going to be the antagonist of choice. Yeah, so they've got a whole list, and I think someone eventually froze it. And I think they do make a joke in passing of like the killer mermaids or something like that.
Yeah, someone's like, I always want the mermaids. Why does no one get the mermaid?
Yeah, and then someone gets killed by the mermaids at the end.
I think it was the guy who said they wanted the mermaid. Yeah.
Yes. So that was a nice callback because. You know, sometimes you want to see those things, and then, I really like the final act. It's just so crazy and ridiculous.
Yeah, totally, totally over the top. All right. God, my ears just popped. What the fuck was that? That was awkward. Am I going deaf?
Maybe.
Years ago.
One, two. Check, one, two.
I came into this world as a reject. Look into these eyes, and you can see the size of the chains. I don't remember the lyrics. Moving on. Okay. Really, this is a weird franchise because I actually haven't seen the first two movies, which are considered to be the best or the most pure of these movies. And now there are five movies and a television show. What could I be referring to?
Chucky?
No, I'd forgotten there was a television show of that. Way funnier, way more charismatic.
Oh, I don't know. Oh, What We Do in the Shadows?
That's not a horror. What are you talking about? There's only one movie.
It's vampires. Yeah. I mean, but I guess like it's just the TV show. I mean, I don't know.
Come on, dude. You got this. I said charismatic.
Oh, that could be.
Hey, you know what my favorite type of soup is? Campbell's soup.
Oh, The Evil Dead?
Yeah. Bruce Campbell and The Evil Dead. So I haven't seen first two movies.
Wait. There is five movies?
So there's Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2. There is Army of Darkness, which is Evil Dead 3. There is the Evil Dead remake, and then there's Rise of the Evil Dead.
Okay, yeah, that tracks, yes.
Nailed it. So, look, what's funny is I don't even like the horror side of this. I saw on daytime television Army of Darkness and thought it was the funniest goddamn thing. And then I think at your suggestion, I did watch like the first two seasons of Ash vs. the Evil Dead and did really enjoy it. But even though it's horror, and I think obviously Sam Raimi's part of it and the mood and the tone is part of it, but like fucking Bruce Campbell is so charismatic. He just, all the humor and the bravado of that fucking character of Ash just Ash Williams, right? It just, yeah. I don't know, it takes the edge off the horror and for some reason lets me enjoy it because it's, I can laugh at it even though like the monsters are genuinely kind of fucking scary. And like the atmosphere is genuinely terrifying. Like, I don't know why humor makes it work to me, but it does. Does that make any sense?
Oh yeah, yeah, because it's like now you're kind of in like that slapstick comedy, but just with blood and guts in it, right? Because that's all it is. I think what's I don't know if we've talked about this before, but one of Raimi's big influences was the Three Stooges, right? And it shows with a lot of the silly things that you know happened to Ash. Yeah. One of them is just like the eye poking gag, which you know you always see the Three Stooges put their hands in the middle of their eyes, and what happens? Well, it's just skeleton, so it just detaches its bones or whatever and pokes him in the eyes.
Yep, so good.
Yeah, but I think it's a good mix of the two, right? Because like you've got those kind of like silly dorky things, and then the blood gushing, and then it kind of goes back to like a little bit more action esque type horror. And it's good to go back and forth with those things. And I think it works well because movies like that, you know, the people are having fun making them. They're taking it they're taking their craft seriously, but they're not taking the movie seriously. I don't know if that kind of makes sense, but like they're having a good time making it. They're not trying to force anything. It's like they know it's ridiculous. They know that you're going to be along for the ride of like, okay, surely this person who knows nothing is going to be an electrical engineer and make a mechanical hand that'll just totally work. But you're in for it. You're in for the ride. And I think that's why those work, right? Because like they kind of establish where they're at. They're not trying to be the scariest movie since The Exorcist. Like they're there to have fun. If you're there to have fun, you're going to have a good time.
I did not put The Exorcist on this list just because I wanted to talk about other stuff instead of The Exorcist, even though it's a great horror movie. All right, well, cool. Evil Dead was mine. Back to you.
I'm going to pick two at the same time. Yeah. And spoiler, I don't actually like them, but...
What?
I was...
Go on.
Hey.
Go on.
But I will say from like the genre perspective, like always want to be a cheerleader and basically be like, hey, like, cause like, it's movies, it's all objective, right? There are some things that are people's jam and other things that aren't. So, it's a tie right now between, I think, what is it? Terrifier 2 and Skinamarink, right? So
is this porn? Are we talking about porn on the cast? I don't have anything on the soundboard for porn.
It is the gore porn, gore stuff. It's everything that people think that, what's it called, Saw and like Texas Chainsaw Massacre were supposed to be. So Terrifier, I want to say the second one, the sequel, came out, I want to say 2 or 3 years ago, maybe. And I'm putting on this list because it did pretty well for an indie horror thing. I think that's always something that is... at least from a like kind of economic side of movie making, like there's always going to be horror movies because those are the movies that have the most return on investment.
Oh God. Yeah.
That is just like the extremely like astronomical, you know, return on investment.
Yes.
Just because of like, they're cheap. People will go see them and like, you don't have to do any marketing. It's a lot of good word of mouth. So yeah, like I think Terrifier 2 is probably like one of the biggest super gory movies that I wouldn't have expected it to do that well, and it just did well. I don't know if it was just one of the timing things because of the pandemic. I think it kind of came out within that time frame.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, I saw the first one. I didn't see the second one, but I read enough and I know enough about it that it's just like, eh. But
well, so okay, actually, I'm gonna pat myself on the back and say I think I named this podcast episode perfectly out of the gates for a change, because this is when does horror work for you? Not necessarily why do you like it. So this worked. Even though you didn't like it, what worked about it?
Oh, okay. Well, first of all, I didn't see it. I just know about it. It didn't work for me.
Oh, I thought you saw the first one, but didn't see the second one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I saw the first one, but I kind of stopped like 75% of the way through because I got bored.
That is not working for you. What the fuck?
No, it doesn't work for me. Okay. But again, give me your credit because like it got a sequel, and that sequel made a boat load of money. And I mean, relative to the, you know, scale that it got, right? So, yeah. There's this genre of horror, which is basically, I like to consider the special effects portfolio reel, where...
Oh, we'll get to John Carpenter's The Thing, baby.
The gimmick isn't to have a good story. The gimmick isn't to, you know, do anything fun. The gimmick is basically, hey, we're going to do these kills and they're going to be the most ridiculous, goriest, silliest thing you've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's fine. Like, I think for me, like, I prefer From the What Works on Me a little bit more story, a little bit more character development, but I kind of see why that works. So that one was pretty good in that sense, right? But it's, again, not bought for me. And then the other one that I mentioned a little while ago was, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it right, Skinamark. So story behind this one
is it, does it premiere on Skinamax at 10 p.m. at night? Like,
now I got the joke from earlier. Funny, funny.
I don't have a hi-hat on this either. God damn it. I am so unprepared on my soundboard.
To be honest, I don't think you're ever going to be able to use that hi-hat at all. So, I mean, that makes sense.
Oh my God. Hold on. I have... Fuck you, buddy. Fuck you.
Okay, so back to Skinamark. What was real, like, again, like, I give this movie lots of credit because it, it's from this person that's a YouTuber, and I think calling you people YouTubers is not...
Oh, I think I've heard of this. Close
to derogatory.
Yeah, the horror movie made by YouTubers. I've heard of this.
Well, I mean, there's like 20 million horror movies made by YouTubers.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. Some podcast talked about this somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah, so the gimmick of this one is, like, made by a YouTuber. The plot is basically there's these two kids that are locked in their house. All the windows and everything are boarded up, and they're locked there for eternity. Sorry for the spoiler. But it's shot in a way that is just, like, really, really experimental. Like, even, like, experimental to the point where I'm just like, okay, you zoomed in and did, like, a 30-second view of the, what's it called, light switch, like, two times already. I don't need another one. This is okay. And their biggest jump scare of the movie, and sorry for spoilers,
it's
everyone.
It's a sexy, phallic light switch. You just touch it, and it just goes up.
And the biggest jump scare of the movie is, like, do you remember those old-school kid telephones that have the eyes and the face and everything? So it's like it's doing one of those, like, whatever, zoom-ins on it, and then all of a sudden it just, like, the eyes get all creepy and it makes a loud reeking noise and everyone freaks out because this film was doing random stuff for, like, 20 minutes beforehand and you kind of zone out. Didn't do it for me.
Pick up the telephone. Hello? We've come to tell you your car's warranty is about to expire. No!
So it didn't do it for me. But when I was looking up and, you know, seeing why people loved it, kind of going back to what you were saying about, like, the claustrophobic thing, like, a lot of people were saying, like, you know, just like, oh, like, one of the nightmares I had was, oh, okay, well, asterisk that I have to put here. The dude's YouTube channel was he would take people's talking about his their nightmares and do, like, 5 to 10 minute short films about it, right? So he has this whole collection of short films based on people's nightmares that they, you know, give to him or whatever, right? So, like, that was the common theme of praise for the film. They're like, oh yeah, like, one of my phobias or fears was just being abandoned as a child and never seeing my parents and yada, yada, yada. And it just, like, it really resonated for me from that perspective. I'm like, okay, I see that. I get that. I see why it worked for you, but, you know, it's peace out. I'll see you later, parents. Bye. I'm okay. I'm good to go. maybe it's a generational thing. Maybe it's all the helicopter kids or with the helicopter parents.
Kids?
Yep, I'm sorry, helicopter parents with, you know, those kids. But I do want to say, like, the other thing that I'm giving her credit for is it was an incredible sight to see. I think was it the Avengers? What was the? It might have been the Avengers or Black Panther 2 or whatever. Like, just, like, seeing, like, mega multi-million Marvel movie, and then right across the hallway from it was the, you know, indie budget horror Skinamark. So I'm like, okay, that's pretty cool.
Nice.
So congratulations.
That feels like how I feel about oh my God, I keep pronouncing it differently every time I say it. Baltaro.
Balzaro. Balzaro.
All the $100 million AAA games in this one Canadian dev working on Beaver Bucks has made the big hit of the spring. It's so great. All right. Ruli, we got a little ad roll here. And again, right. Inspired by you. After these messages, we'll be right back. Dear listener, this episode brought to you by Good Lighting. Good lighting. It's what Raul has. Don't look like a bridge troll like Tom. He's got big, giant... He looks like a fucking alien with a bald head and giant eyes. No, look like Raul. What? Did you just turn another light on?
Yes, I did. I work all day from home. I don't want to look like a slob.
Oh, I look like... Well, I mean, I don't work in this room. This room with the fucking incandescent lights above me, I look like... Oh my god, I look terrifying. I look terrifying in the Zoom call. I don't look that bad when I'm out in the main room and I have natural light coming through the windows, but... Oh, like, I'm just looking at me, I'm like, I look like an alien from fucking X-Files. Look at the size of these big black eyes. And my face is behind the mic, can't even see me talking. This is creepy as fuck. This is creepier. My lighting makes me look creepier than one of those floating heads from Apple Vision Pro. And that shit is scary. That horror does not work for me.
Reel it in. Good lighting. Thank you.
All right, moving on. All right, Ruli, this is a twofer right here. Okay. Everyone knows, who has ever listened to this podcast for a single episode knows, I love Alien and Aliens. Love it. Mm-hmm. Why the fuck do I love the Xenomorph? The last episode, we watched the trailer for Alien Romulus. I'm stoked. Now, I hate horror, but I love sci-fi, right? So, like, is that the only reason I love these movies? Now, just taking them in reverse order, Aliens is a sci-fi action movie, which is just punctuated by horror. So why are you scared of shooting a gun? Why is it not just 80s machismo? Well, that's because the aliens are fucking scary and they're actually hunting the fucking predators. So again, action movie that is enhanced by the horror atmosphere. But Alien itself is an amazing movie with amazing atmosphere and amazing pacing. And genuinely, I think I rewatched it like 2 years ago, still fucking scary. But if you asked me, why do I like it? Like I said, it's well made. Like I just said, all those things. But outside of, and it's science fiction, I don't know why to tell you I feel the horror works so well. Why am I interested in Alien Romulus, right? Like, I don't know. Is it nostalgic love at this point for the Xenomorph? Like, what is it? Why is Alien awesome?
Well, I'll work a little bit backwards. I remember seeing that movie younger, and then I remember seeing that movie now, and... The alien does kind of look a little silly at the end, because it's like not the, it's the one that has the human legs a little bit more than crazy, more creature-like legs.
And one of the last shots is it getting shot out of the escape pod and then like dangling on that, dangling on the little like cable. Mm-hmm. That shot looks terrible. It looks like an action figure dangling. It's so bad.
Silly, which is fine because it shows its age, right? But it just like that kind of goes back to what I want to get to is when you see the whole creature at the end, it can be kind of silly. But the whole pace and whole lead up to it is you really don't see the creature that much. You see the aftermath. You see everything that happens, right? So I think that's kind of like the imaginative part of horror, just like what could possibly do that. And it's a mix of the other side of it too, of the in your face jump scare with the scene that I think everyone remembers is the chestburster. Did these have the facehuggers in this one? I think it did, right?
Yeah. John Hurt gets one on his face, and that's where they bring him back, and Ash lets him into the ship showing that he's the bad guy.
Yeah. So I think those two things, right? You've got kind of like that very intimate, it's going to hug your face. Then you've got that kind of very raw, visceral.
The H.R. Giger, everything is going to rape you visuals.
So you get all of that. And I think just like other little nuancey things, like everything blurs together. I'm trying to figure out like how much of like their blood is acid thing was also there.
Oh, yeah, is that's there too. Yep, acid for blood. That's why they can't cut it off. Ash.
So many little random things that kind of add up to like, what is this horrible monster thing that it plays out in your imagination and you see it, you know, everything it mowing down everyone else.
It is very alien, right? How it reproduces acid for blood, the fact that it grows, skin comes out. It is alien, no pun intended.
It's the unknown, right? So that is kind of like the scary part where it's just like, you don't know what's going on or what's going to happen. And then it's just this dude in the giant alien suit. Okay, we're good.
Yeah. One last note about Aliens, the original, is I've had this conversation numerous times and people feel differently about this, but I feel so strongly about it. The aesthetic of Alien, how they have like Mother and the room full of lights and everything's, you know, old CRT TVs. For me, I say that movie could be made today and all of the aesthetic would seem like a stylistic choice. To me, it doesn't seem like other movies like The Black Hole or other like 70s science fiction that feels like trapped in its era, like everybody has the same shirts and haircuts they would have in the 70s. To me, yeah. Alien feels stylistic in how it has aged. So anyway, just a side note, that's personal opinion. Ruli, back to you.
Okay, let's see. Trying to think, because this is a wide genre.
By the way, I've got three more. So I've done three, and I've got three more. I'm halfway.
Okay. I'll throw one out here, and if you tell me it's too much like the other one, I can pass on it. This Shaun of the Dead, does that work well? Okay, I'll pass Shaun of the Dead.
No, you can. I mean, it's, I think of that entirely as comedy. I don't even think of a single frame of that as horror, personally.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But you can talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's horror with zombies, yeah. Again. It kind of plays on the tropes. Yeah. I feel like it's a lot of the what I was reiterating with Cabin in the Woods.
I actually think, hot take, and everyone knows my love for Hot Fuzz, I think Hot Fuzz actually has scarier elements than Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, yeah. Doesn't it show a couple of those, like, deaths pretty gruesomely? And
yeah,
then, like,
the head explodes at the tower, and it's literally a slasher fic with a guy in robes. Like, I think there's more horror elements in in Hot Fuzz than Shaun of the Dead, but that's just me.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll put that in the honorable mention stack. Yeah.
An honorable mention on behalf of Zach. We'll get to that one.
Okay. I feel like I'm giving credit. I'm going to be giving credit to movies that I'm not in love with. But I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to mention the Rob Zombie House of a Thousand Corpses movie.
I wouldn't have known if that was an album or a movie. Why? Why does it work for you?
It's both. Well, it works for High School Raul because that was Rob Zombie's first motion picture. His genre of music kind of set it up for someone who knew and appreciated horror. And the stuff in the visuals he put together are, I think, very interesting and unique out of all the horror genres. That being said, the parts that doesn't to me is just, dude can't write a story to save his life. It's so sad.
I'm sorry, we're talking about J.J. Abrams? What?
I mean, it's a common thread with a lot of these folks. Like, especially the folks that are, like, super, super visionary. When you hear visionary, that means no writing. It just means pictures. Nice pictures. So I guess maybe the other theme is mermaid, because I think there is someone that turns into a taxidermy mermaid in that movie.
A taxidermy that is mermaid?
Yeah.
Is that a mermaid that is a taxidermist or a mermaid that has been stuffed in taxidermy fashion?
I believe it gets turned into mermaid boy. So that's a thing.
Because it would have been really cool if a mermaid was also a taxidermist. Like, here's flounder on my wall.
Hey, run with it. You may have something there.
Dear listener, he was laughing. I don't know if that made it onto the track, but he was laughing.
as a high schooler who didn't see that many movies, was super hyped on it. I mean, like I said, when I got older and stuff and saw more movies, that has a lot of, like, blemishes on it, but it definitely has a huge following. I think there is just this whole group of Rob Zombie followers that, you know, just like the more raw, more gritty, more ridiculous villains and everything. So it's good. It scratched an itch when I was at that age, and your mileage may vary.
Noted. All right. My next one on here is, hold on. We got music for this. Star Trek and the Borg. The Borg are like the closest thing to a horror element in Star Trek. And yeah. Star Trek First Contact is the closest thing to a horror movie in the Star Trek franchise, right? But the Borg... The horror elements are, again, doing the same thing we already talked about, right? Punctuating the other elements. The concept of you could be assimilated, you could become a drone. And the fact that the Federation, Star Trek's whole thing is about peace, about seeking out new life forms, new civilizations, boldly going where no one has gone before. And the Borg are their ultimate threat, not just because they're cool, not because they're scary, but because the Borg cannot be negotiated with. They cannot be coexisted with. And so they are supposed to be an existential threat to the Federation. And so what do they do to highlight that? They make them kind of scary as well. So I don't know. Again, I feel like I sound like a fucking middle schooler, which to be fair is when I was watching Star Trek on TV. But I just felt like I had to put the Borg on this list, even if it's not exactly horror. Do you give a shit? Do you wish Zach was here so he and I could talk about this and you could go get a drink and take a piss maybe?
No. I mean, I can see the angle of it. I see the appeal. It's very much the... It's the antithesis of the Federation, right?
Yes.
So,
and your vocabulary.
Well, I mean, they are kind of creepy too, right? It's there's lots of zombie vibes, the horde vibes of all the things.
Fun trivia. Originally, they weren't going to be like cybernetic organisms. Originally, they were going to be insects, but they didn't have the budget, so they became the Borg we know and love today. All right, that's all I have for Star Trek. I swear I have no other Star Trek on this list. Ruli, what's another for you? And then after this, I got two more after.
Okay. I'm trying to figure out which ones I want to talk about. Because have you heard of Letterboxd?
Yes. Is that a streaming service? It's not Redbox. Maybe I have. I know I've heard the name. What is it?
This is the social media platform that centers around movies.
Oh, okay.
Its whole thing is just you put in whatever movie you saw and write a review for it and all that fun stuff.
Oh, sweet IMDb.
I am always very hit and miss, but I'm looking at this to see what I've seen over there's some times where I'm like all in on it and I track everything, and then there are other times where I'm just like, nope, not happening. Okay, so let me see. I think the next one I'm going to go with is... Okay, I think I've got two genres, or two ones that'll be that work for me that are definitely me. I'm going to go with the easy one first. I'll just say 30% of Stephen King adaptations.
No, 100% are entertaining. Well, except Dreamcatcher. Mm-hmm. That one sucked. Stephen King, right? Like, kind of... seminal horror, prolific both as an author and as an, movie adaptations, and kind of hilarious and whenever he directs his own. But what about Stephen King, or is it which movies specifically are you in love with? Or work for you? You don't have to be in love with them. Which ones work for you?
I like the Pet Sematary ones. I think both the remake and the new one were pretty good.
Oh, I can't watch that shit. I can't do it. Can't do it.
Why? Why?
Looks down at my dog. Not happening. Can't watch that shit.
Yeah, but
sometimes
okay,
so really dead is better.
But again, I think that kind of goes back to sometimes when the horror works because it does kind of play on the scary parts of life, right? It's just like, hey, bad things could happen. And I think
you could argue I am just a emotional weakling on that particular topic, and I'll just look at you and go, yeah, yes, I am. Moving on.
But to be fair, like, Pet Sematary is literally, what are all the tropes of parental loss that could happen? Yeah. Let's do that. that's kind of a heavy subject, but again, it's executed well. I think it's a good movie.
Yeah. I know I've seen Stephen King movies, but for some reason, if you asked me, Tom, what do you want to watch of Stephen King's? I would say, well, thank you, really. Thank you for asking that. I really appreciate it. And then I would proceed to answer, I kind of want to rewatch some of his made-for-TV movies, like Night Flyer and shit like that. I kind of, The Langoliers. Like, I kind of want to rewatch the made-for-TV ones.
You don't want to watch The Langoliers.
They sound so entertaining.
I loved it, and it's basically the same problem with Aliens. These CGI meatballs are just killing me. I cannot watch those CGI meatballs. It makes me so sad.
I don't know. Is there a single TV adaptation you would want to watch? Maybe Stephen King's adaptation of The Shining.
Okay, let me go through the ones that I don't know the movie, what's it called, the TV ones more than the movies. But another one I go with would be Creepshow.
Not sure I know which that one, I think
That's the one that it has, like, I don't know if it was based on the comic books or just like the old school Tales from the Crypt type things. That whole genre. And the whole anthology horror thing is another one that, which is kind of funny. I can't think of any other movies that do anthologies other than horrors, right? Like, there's no, like, romantic comedy anthology movie or...
Hey, asshole, have you heard of Love Actually? I think that movie sucks, but people love that fucking movie, and it sucks.
It's an anthology?
Yeah, dude, there's, like, fucking seven different little stories running through it, and it... They don't even connect. That's the worst part about that movie. They air quotes connect because all the people end up in the same airport, but they don't interact with each other. They just walk by each other. That movie sucks.
Okay, you're making me not want to see that.
Correct.
So. Okay, I'm just because I'm going to... apparently, there is a whole list of Stephen King movies, and like everything has been adapted.
No fucking shit.
I've seen Children of the Corn. That was horrible. Creepshow was good. Gerald's Game was good. Maximum Overdrive. And I think what's always fun is just
I think that was his directorial debut, actually.
Oh, yes. And it says train wreck. It is such a beautiful train wreck. The Mist. I think The Mist is probably the one that most folks think or say is the best adaptation.
Who directed that? That's not Carpenter. I forget who directed that.
Frank Darabont?
Oh, Frank Darabont, yeah.
Darabont, there you go.
He's the guy who was originally the show creator and showrunner for Walking Dead, bro.
Okay. I should probably know that, but I don't. And I'll throw this other one out here, a movie that we've both appreciated, The Running Man.
That's Stephen King?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
No, I'd forgotten. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, yeah. I vaguely remember Thinner. The other ones that... people don't associate Stand By Me, the Bees.
Oh, I mean, that's definitely a Stephen King one. And the boys in the woods in New England who find dead bodies. Oh, no. Who could it possibly be? I don't know. At least there wasn't fucking underage orgy in that movie.
Hey, it didn't happen in the movie.
Thank God.
So kind of going back to what works, I think, at least with the movies and with Stephen King as a whole, he's got the storytelling aspect of it. He can put together this long, long story and make it work. But he's also shotgun enough where, you know, just like comparing something like The Running Man to The Mist. If I didn't tell you that those were the same person, you probably would have never guessed that.
Oh, no, that's how many books that motherfucker's written.
So, yeah, I think what works there is there's enough variety. And just this, again, I feel like the core thing for me is always the storytelling that always kind of makes it fun.
Yeah. Well, regarding Stephen King, there's an old saying, Raul, and that is, cocaine is a hell of a drug. All right. Real quick, before we get to the final two.
This is another entry in the unfortunately recurring segment.
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Ruli, Balatro, are you playing it?
Yeah.
How are you liking it? We're never going to do a full QQ review of it, even though I love it.
Why are we not going to do a full QQ review?
I do you want to have QQ review Roguelike Night? Because goddamn, dude, I will be so into that.
That's totally what I suggested.
But I thought you were like fucking today. With me.
No. I was legit about saying, why have you not played Inscription yet? Because it literally seems to be everything that you want in a card game. But
there's actually a really simple answer for that, and it doesn't have controller support. So aside from my hand injury, which... Thank God, after a year, is finally getting better.
That's good. Good news. Dude, good news.
It's been a ride. Thank you. I don't, you know, thank you, pandemic. I don't want to be behind my desk after work. I don't want to do it. I fucking hate it. I'm podcasting in a different room because I don't want to be behind my goddamn desk. And so mouse and keyboard is hard. I could bring it on the couch and play Inscription that way. But like everything I've been playing has controller support.
I got so addicted to it that I was doing the, Steam streaming thing, Steam Link on my iPhone, so I don't think there's any excuse to not play it.
I should. And maybe even the touchpad on the Steam Deck is good enough.
Okay, but I'm going to reel us back in again.
Okay.
Yes, I like it, I think. What I didn't like, and this is probably just me being dumb, the first two rounds are really, really, really hard. Once you play a couple times and understand the system, it gets easier, but I feel like I've lost because of stupid decisions the first couple of rounds that kind of almost let me not wanting to play it.
Yeah, especially, you know, my girlfriend and I have been caressing on it a lot, and we're doing the harder difficulties now. And so especially that first ante, not even the first just round or two, the first ante, if you don't get, especially like when it stops giving you money on the first round, if you don't get enough money to buy a good Joker. If it's rare, you can't afford it. And if it's common, it might suck. Like, if you don't get a half-decent Joker in that first ante, man, you might as well fucking restart. And that is that is annoying. Because we were having so much fun with it. And the closest we even came to getting frustrated or churning as we spent like an hour going back and forth. And like, we just would lose run after 10 minutes, lose run after 10 minutes. And, like, that was the one night we were like, okay, this is fucking frustrating. Because other than that, goddamn, it's been great. Okay, fine. Fuck it. If you're actually serious, when we are back from the eclipse, which, shit, it might be the week after because we're going to get back on Wednesday. Anyway, when we are back from partying it up QQ Live style, then we are doing the QQ Review Roguelite mini round edition thing. I'll name it better later. Okay.
But can I say one more thing? Because this has made me so angry that I just want to say it out loud.
Oh, my God. Why are you doing this? Don't break my heart. Don't do it.
No, this is a good thing, but I guess it comes down to, like, discoverability in games. So, I tend to watch, you know, random YouTube videos or, like, you know, the 10 things I wish to know in X video game before I started playing it. And, you know, once I usually watch that after I maybe, like, a couple hours into it, just so I can kind of, like, see, okay, what did I miss, if anything?
Same here.
And in the good and better games, those videos are garbage because they're, like, pretty obvious things. The one that I saw that didn't stick out to me that made me so angry was apparently you can reorder the Jokers.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I didn't know you could do that. I didn't know you could do that. Oh. I didn't even think you could do that. And once I realized that, I think that was the big game changer for me winning the game because it's just like...
Then your multipliers can be in the right order.
Yeah, yeah. And you put your multipliers at the end. Yes, and then it makes sense. But if you put... I think it was impossible to discover with how the game set up.
I don't remember when that tutorial tells you can reorder them. I don't remember. Cards and you can reorder Jokers. So, like, cards, sometimes it's like double something when you play your first face card. So you want the face card on the far right. Oh, fucking such a great game. Okay. We'll be back to that. Ruli, let's wrap this up. I've got my last two. The first one, and, you know, I've talked about this many times. John Carpenter's The Thing. Dear God, it is every type of horror to me, because it starts off a mystery, like what happened on the ice, what happened to the Norwegian camp. Then it goes into, I wouldn't call it body horror, but it is eldritch horror, right? Like the people are getting transformed, the monsters are eating people. Mm-hmm. Then it goes into paranoia. Who goes there is the original story, right? Who is the monster? Who is not? And then it gets into just kind of monster-esque flamethrowers. It's burning shit down. But it does all of it so well, and to me, no one type of horror outstays its welcome. I just fucking love The Thing. Great fucking flick.
Okay.
You seem to disagree. Why?
No, I don't disagree. I think it's a great movie, and I think most people would not pick that movie as that director's best. People would tend to end up on Halloween.
Well, Halloween's his most commercially successful, but I don't care for Halloween. I'm not saying it's a bad movie at all. I'm not a slasher guy. Doesn't do it for me. A lot of other Carpenter stuff. They Live, fucking The Thing. I need to watch. I never saw all of In the Mouth of Madness. I should watch that. And then what's the third one in his horror trilogy? The Mouth of Madness.
I mean, he's got a bunch. The Halloween sequel, and there's a lot of Halloween movies in there. I don't think he did all of them.
Yeah, he did Christine. I never actually saw Christine either. Mm-hmm. Carpenter's great. So yeah, I love The fucking Thing, and that's why it works for me. So, all right, back to you.
I have so many bad answers.
You got two more.
Know.
You got two more, bro.
Two more. Got two more. What do I want to do? This is really hard. This is like picking between my two children, but multiply that by like 30.
Well, your child is named Sophia. Sophia's choice. Sophia's choice.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun.
Okay. I'm just, you know what? I'll see myself out.
Adios. You know what? I'll just piggyback on the anthology one. Cause like I was mentioning, like the horror anthology thing is a trope that I guess other than Love Actually is a thing. So I'm gonna go with Trick or Treat. When did that one come out?
Like, I know that's the name of a horror movie, but fuck if I could tell you what it is, dude.
2007. That's when it came out. So it's a good little.
Okay, so I was like living with you at the time. Got it.
Yeah, It's a good little anthology movie. I want to say it had four stories. There's like a werewolf one. There's a revenge one. There's some other stuff in there too. It's good. It's a fun ride. What does it for me is just like it's sometimes the shorter, you know, anthologies films kind of give the ability to try something and be a little bit more ridiculous about it and just be a little bit more creative. So it was fun. And it's funny because I think literally like what you said about Love Actually, the movie ends with them all crossing the street at the same time, not interacting with each other, which
Hooray.
Is funny.
So deep and meaningful and spiritual. Yay.
Oh, yeah, it was fun.
All right. Well, cool, man. Last one on my list. Oh, well, I'm sorry. The honorable mention on behalf of Zach is, of course, Event Horizon. I haven't rewatched that in so long. I don't know, man. Is it just Lawrence Fishburne and Sam Neill? Is it the fact that it's such an absurd concept of a starship coming back from hell? Or I don't know. What makes Event Horizon work? I don't know, man. I feel it's like so bad it's good territory. And I do love that movie.
Event Horizon work is that there's a very small Venn diagram of sci-fi and horror, and that's probably the last one in the list that you can pull from. That's why it works so well. Keep dipping those toes in those water, Tom. It's fine. You can watch more horror movies. It's going to be okay.
Hey, I didn't put Predator on the list because it's not a horror movie. It's fucking, it might be a slasher movie, but no, goddammit, it's an action movie. All right. The last one on my list, and really, I know you haven't, this isn't a movie, so I'm sort of breaking the rules, but it's something that actually, the minute I thought about doing this topic, because I did want to do this topic for you, this is what I thought of first, because it's fresh in my mind, and I had to talk about it. Which is, you know, I mentioned over and over again, last year I played The Outer Wilds. It was a transformative game for me. It is beautiful. I love that game. It is now in my top probably three games of all time. And its expansion, Echoes of the Eye, is borderline a horror game, until it's not. And it is beautiful, even though it's a horror game. And I don't like horror games. Like, why would I like hanging around in the dark with a fucking lantern? But it's because it's still kind of exploration. It's still kind of puzzles. But the mystery that it's telling is amazing and beautiful. And I can't talk about it without spoiling, like major spoilers. But there is a significant turning point in the expansion in Echoes of the Eye where it basically instantaneously ceases to be horror. Because the whole thing about Outer Wilds, it's all about information. It's a mystery you're solving. Once you have the information, you know it. And Echoes of the Eye has a bunch of amazing story to it, amazing twists in it. But there's this one that once you have it, you're like, oh, nothing is scary anymore. But
interesting.
The tension and the fear, like when I played it, Trey and I played Outer Wilds together in person. And then Steph and I played Echoes of the Eye remotely. There are some horror moments where we were playing at night, like, you know, through Discord on the couch. And when something would happen, the three of us would start fucking screaming. Like, out loud. Like, I was, like, scared out loud. Steph was screaming out loud. Like, that's how scary some of it is. But then there's this revelation. And again, it's all about the tone, about the mystery. And then there's this revelation where all of a sudden, nothing is scary anymore. And
interesting.
I don't know anything else quite like it to describe it. It's beautiful and it's amazing, even though it's a horror game. And there's basically no horror video games that I like. Aside from, like, House of the Dead, which isn't a horror game. So I can't recommend
zombies.
Yeah, I can't recommend Outer Wilds enough. You cannot play Echoes of the Eye without having played the base game and completed it first. Like, technically you can, but it'd be meaningless if you did. But it is horror and it is incredible experience. So
okay.
Outer Wilds, my standard Tom must pimp that. All right, man, you get the last word. What is, if not the number one thing, the final thing on this list where horror works for you?
Okay, so this is the genre that I'd probably say is things go bad and they just keep getting worse and worse and worse. So I actually saw this movie pretty recently, When Evil Lurks. So
look, that is a generic as fuck name. I like it. It's generic as fuck. That could be an Evil Dead movie. That could be a fucking Cornetto trilogy movie. I'm just saying.
Yes. So it's a plot of that is there's this family and there's like a possessed person on their premises. That possessed person dies. They get rid of the body. And you're kind of piecing together what exactly is going on in this universe. And it's apparently like demons are an everyday thing that people are aware of and try to avoid that happening because it could basically destroy the entire town around you. And sure enough, everything in that entire town goes kind of crazy.
I actually do like the concept of like a terrible thing is real, but we all know it's real. So now it's just kind of monotonous. Like, yeah, I'll avoid the demon when I go over my coffee this morning. This is fine.
Yeah, but I think the hard part with that genre, though, is it's like the Buffy effect, where it's just like, well, if everyone knows about vampires and demons, why are they a problem? Like, you should have solved this already. But anyways, so I don't know if I put it as, it's probably more like suspense, but what's the Sandra Bullock, Gravity, right?
Oh, I never saw Gravity.
Genre movies like that, where it's just like, something bad happens and you think it's going to be okay. And it just gets worse and worse and worse. I know it's a zombie movie, but the, what's it called? The remake of Dawn of the Dead, kind of situations like that, where it's just like, you think it's going to get happy and people are going to make it through. And then there's just no way out of it. So the Relentless, you know, put your protagonist through the worst things ever. And you hope that they'll get out of it. And you know, nope, they don't. You think that there's going to be that catharsis there, but it's not. So
what an upbeat way to end the night. I'd love to go watch a movie and then go to bed. I don't have enough existential dread as it is.
But I will say, though, that that's the thing, though, right? I think it's what other genre than horror kind of does bring you to those kind of like tell those type of stories, right? Again, it's just like,
I don't know, fucking drama. I don't know, Marley and me? Like, what do you want from me, bro?
When drama movies have any seriousness to them, they always, like, so many of those movies have the happy endings. And, you know, it's good. It's I'm not going to poo-poo on happy endings, but, you know.
I need a happy ending in my life, dude.
Hey-o.
Yeah, that too. But no, I don't want to watch things. We've talked about this. I don't want to watch things that are depressing anymore. Like, the Joker movie, I didn't fucking watch it. The sequel, I'm not going to watch it. Like, I hear that Dark is actually an amazing sci-fi time travel Netflix show. Mm-hmm. It's depressing. I don't want to watch it. I hear Chernobyl's incredible. I don't want to watch it. Like, I don't know, man. I it's not that I don't think they'd be great or well told. I don't know. I need to be fed some fucking something kind of happy, and it doesn't have to be sweet saccharine bullshit. But I don't know. I just don't. Scary is one thing, but like depressing is another. And I have enough depression as it is. I just don't want to intake more in my off hours. So
well then there you go. You've got the perfect outline of what works for you, what doesn't work for you. It's just the happy, silly horror movies.
Yay. All right. Well, maybe someday we'll be back to talk about more horror. But until that day, Ruli, let's read some headlines.
Everyone, great news, everyone. Bad news, everyone.
Uh-oh, I don't like the sound of that.
You are?
See, it's actually great having video now, because I saw you put your hand up like you were going to say something, but it's like, oh, we can't stop the soundboard, so I'll shut up.
It does help.
Were you going to say something?
No, I've already forgot it because my train of thought was broken.
All right, I got a handful of just absolutely useless and meaningless headlines here. A couple about movies. Another Lego sequel is coming. Happy Gilmore 2 is teed up with Adam Sandler and Shooter McGavin's actor. I feel so bad that he's just called Shooter McGavin's actor. Look, aside from, you know, Adam Sandler's career being what it is, and even I couldn't bring myself to watch a movie about him being a spaceman talking to a giant spider, but like, we don't need this. We don't need this. We do not need a Happy Gilmore 2. There's nothing about that character, nothing about that story, nothing. The grandmother is long since dead. She died 20 years ago. No, literally, RIP, that actress. We don't need this. Why the fuck are we doing a Happy Gilmore 2? Who wants this? No. Why?
I think we talked about this a while back. There was a news interview with Adam Sandler, and he basically said that he tries to plan it out where, whenever he films a movie and he's on location, he makes it wherever he wants, you know, wants to have a vacation.
Yeah.
And it just clicked. And I'm like, more power to you, bro. Like, if you want to go golfing again for another 6 months, go make a movie and go golf.
Oh, yeah. No, that was the whole Netflix series of movies thing. That whole deal was just like, man, Sandler is just trying to take his friends to go on vacations. Why do they make Grown Ups 1 and 2? Which, by the way, everyone hates Grown Ups 1 and 2. I'm not saying they are good films by any stretch of the imagination. Of all the films to fucking diss on and hate, those are the two. Really? There is way worse shit than Grown Ups. They're like, they're not funny, but they're not offensive. Love Actually is more offensive than that shit. Okay, moving on.
Minor pivot.
Yeah, do it.
I think I mentioned a while back that Netflix finally put out some of their stats on like engagement and, you know, whatever they consider people watching.
Oh, really?
Movies and stuff. Yeah, they did that a while back, and I'm kind of wondering like where all the Adam Sandler movies fit, because like they keep making them. So whatever reason it is,
I mean, as long as it gets some attention on day one, who cares? I'll never get more Cowboy Bebop. I'm so sad. All right, moving on. Man, you know, we ranted about, I guess maybe it was just Zach and I don't remember if you were there. We ranted about Yuzu, the emulator, getting taken down. Well, Nintendo, the litigious company, has struck again. Well, this isn't exactly Nintendo, but the Pokemon company. A massive Pokemon fan game site has been taken down without warning via DMCA. So there's a million Pokemon fan mods out there, entire games. And there's a lot of reviews you can read that actually say some of those mods are better than the actual Pokemon games themselves. And these are like, mod is an understatement, right? This is like the old school Half-Life mods where it's a whole new fucking game just made in that engine. And yeah, it's kind of sad for me to hear about something like this. They'll get taken. Now it's the internet. None of them, that's actually gone. You can go download AM2R right now. Like, it's not anywhere. But that sucks. That's sad. You know, people, you know, the company does have to legally protect their IP, but, you know, these mods aren't generally being sold. They're certainly not taken away from Pokemon sales numbers. I don't know, man. A little sad fan projects getting shut down.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not a fan of it, but I think is a lot of that stuff too, though, where it's just like, in order to maintain copyrights and stuff, you basically have to make sure you're trying to protect your IP. Otherwise, it's just like, well,
yeah,
if you let this slide when something legit comes around,
yeah,
you can't pull out the big guns.
It is basically that simple. It is, then the next person can go, well, they didn't sue them. So the minute you let it slide, yeah. Okay, well, let me jump ahead to a different headline in the stream here, just so I can bitch about Nintendo all at once. Mr. Nintendo fanboy over here. This is sad. This is very uncommon for Japanese companies, let alone Nintendo. Nintendo confirms testing layoffs amid first-party lull and reports of the Switch 2 delay. So because the Switch 2 is delayed into 25, because the first-party titles, you know, are going to come to that, Nintendo's actually laying off some of its QA staff. And that's sad because the game state of the games industry. That's sad because Nintendo in the past has actually done the opposite. Their executives have taken pay cuts. They've actually done raises during layoff times to keep retention for their folks. So it's a little sad seeing them do a layoff. I mean, you know, look, business is business, and some things are necessary sometimes, and I don't like any of it. But it's sad. I don't know. I hate the games industry has been in a... The tech industry has been in a bad state for a while, and the games industry has lagged behind it and is catching up now. It sucks. Sad.
Yeah.
I want to mention it.
I forgot what the commentary I was hearing about, but like, they were mentioning how, of course, there are so many things that the whole COVID incident made things go horrible. But I think the biggest one that people were calling out is just the kind of like boomerangish pendulum swing where like just think of how much we're talking about how Animal Crossing was printing money, right? It's just like they had a huge, huge boom, and I think a lot of just because, you know, the trend in companies is just like the bar's always, you know, the line's going to always go up into the right. Why would it not go up in the right? Let's act like it's going to go up in the right forever. So it's always hard to say, like, you know, especially someone like a group like Nintendo, how much are they just kind of like having their kind of chickens come home to roost? But they, since they played it mostly conservatively for a lot of the stuff they do, and they make a lot of smart decisions, it caught up to them eventually. It just kind of caught up to them 3 to 4 years later versus, you know, some other places where had those, you know, their job firings and all the, you know, their changes like within like the first like year or two right after COVID. So,
well, and I, you know, it's a whole topic in of itself. I know we've talked about it before, but like, you know, not, I don't even say this only as an industry insider, right? I'm a professional, been a professional game dev for a very long time. AAA game development is practically unsustainable. the amount of time and energy and money it takes to make a high-quality AAA video game is absurd. And the projects get longer and longer, and the lulls get bigger and bigger. It's nuts. It's feast or famine with AAA. And I don't know that it's sustainable. It's one of the reasons I actually, you know, controversially am pro AI coming in and working this stuff, right? I mean, like, the way the printing press didn't put people hand scribing books out of out of jobs, it created more jobs. Like, I think the only way to make it sustainable is new tools, including things like AI. Because if we were constantly creating new content, then these QA testers might still have jobs. And again, I believe me, I'm not exactly an expert, but I have a lot of experience with test automation. Whatever. This is a whole fucking rabbit hole. But the point being, it's sad. Moving on to something less sad. No, this is almost as sad. Pirates of the Caribbean confirms the sixth movie will be a reboot. Does anyone care? I don't care, Roel. Do you care? Say no.
I thought the fifth movie was the reboot, but also I don't know. I lost. Look, I think I liked one and two, and then after that it's just like, eh.
Pirates of the Caribbean 1 is actually remarkably, astonishingly a phenomenal movie. So much better than it has any right to be. It is fucking fantastic. 2 and 3, fine. Everything comes after that, I don't know, I don't want to know, and I don't care. But reboot time, baby! I only have one more article here, and that's just that apparently there was a vulnerability found in Apple's Silicon M-series chips. And so,
All of them.
Yeah, well, the M1 and 2 were confirmed. Was the M3 confirmed to have the same?
I saw that it was all of them, but I mean, that was a tweet in passing.
It has to do with how the processor is actually trying to do prediction. Like, all people don't realize how complicated microprocessors are, and I mean, even as a fucking professional software engineer, I can only claim to barely understand. But there's a lot of heuristics going on in the chips, where they're trying to predict what's going to happen next to try to speed up things, caching, execution, because processors are fetch, execute, repeat, right? So apparently, this vulnerability has to do with people having been able to figure out the kind of fetch and cache strategy for executions, and so by doing that, people can actually figure out, oh, this part of the chip is actually prioritizing encryption, decryption keys. They can load them out of memory directly in the processor. So crazy, crazy levels of hacks, hardware level vulnerability that you can't patch the fuck out. Pretty impressive. I don't know. Look, don't go to DEF CON. Okay, don't do it. You'll be fine is my rule. I don't know. Any comments on this shit?
If I put my tinfoil hat on, it's probably a backdoor to get into the things, but it's probably not. Those mistakes happen. This is why you don't fire quality control.
Oh, fucking tie back. Woo! All right, do you have any more headlines, or we want to watch a trailer and get the fuck out of here?
Oh, I have no headlines that are acceptable for this podcast.
All right, I have got a trailer that I have not watched about a movie whose sequel I have not watched, and this is something I probably will not watch, but I don't know, it seemed entertaining, so let's do this.
Rebel Bad Moon Boy. Part 2.5?
Yes, exactly that.
I saw the Rebel Moon book at Target the other day, and I was like, oh wait, they made a book of that, I forgot.
Is Rebel Moon 2 Part 2 next month?
Oh, I have no idea. I'm not going to take one for the team on that one.
I don't know. I kind of want to watch it. It was so god awful. I kind of want to watch it. So
there's another one,
huh?
This isn't from like 2003. Am I in a time warp?
Right. I know. No. This is they're making a third movie in this series. Ruli, tell to your listener what we're about to watch.
Bad Boys: : Ride or Die - Official Trailer HD.
The HD is in brackets, Raul.
In brackets?
Yeah, I know I've seen part one, but I don't even remember it. I just know I didn't see the Lego sequel with part two. And they're making another one. Hooray! At least this one's in theaters. Was Bad Boys 2 in theaters, or was that straight to streaming?
I think that was in theaters. Yeah.
Is this Michael Bay? This is how little I fucking know. No, it's going to be directed by someone who's not Michael Bay. But it will be produced by Jerry Bruckheimer. Whatever, fuck it. You ready for this?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1, play.
Bad Boys trailer is coming out
right now.
Right now. Right now.
Yeah, right now.
Yay, meta humor.
It's the trailer. It's the trailer for the trailer.
Come on, Mike, slow down.
We are late.
Wait, what are we watching again?
What are we watching? I don't know, a generic movie where someone's driving a car fast?
And nothing else. Are those dogs fresh?
Put them in yesterday.
Give me one. Why put some can I not drink a ginger ale with nothing else? Shouldn't I be allowed to do that?
Is that Skittles on the counter, Marcus?
This ain't mine, Mike.
Yes, it is.
Shut the fuck up!
Marcus, get in the car.
He has a gun to my head.
Want
to
deal with him? You want to deal with me?
Sorry, sir.
This is so cheesy.
Call 911.
Aren't you the police?
This is so cheesy.
Hey, Reggie, do you eat my snacks?
I'm not even entertained. Judge Dredd did that scene better. I'm a U.S. Marine. I said, hot shot. Deploy.
Dad, look. We now have evidence that the late Captain Conrad Howard of Miami PD was working directly with drug cartels for years.
What?
Did you know who that
is? What a twist. What a twist. No, no, but he's supposed to be the good guy. That's all I know.
What a twist.
No, he's not, Marcus. If he's seeing this, I'm probably dead.
I think it's a double cross.
Fuckers, fuck them all.
Which actor is that?
I don't know. High up this shit goes.
Is he Cypher from Matrix?
You're my bad boys.
No,
you're my name.
Maybe.
You're my bad boys. He said it. He said the name. He said it. Wee.
They're being set up.
So we're going to Halo jump Mission Impossible style, I guess? Yeah, this looks like a CGI crappier version of a Tom Cruise movie.
And Burnett. They're armed and dangerous.
In five.
Oh, they're the bad guys now. They are
the
bad boys.
You gotta get it right. I mean, it sure looks like an action movie. Just, I haven't seen anything unique yet, and looks cheesy. Okay, no. Go back to the fluorescent glow in the dark nightclub. I want to watch that.
I need nasty, Mike. Bad boy. I got this.
Dude, Will Smith has aged incredibly well. It is a little jarring. I'm not shaming Martin Lawrence. The guy's probably in his 50s or close to it. But, like, he is not nearly as in shape as Will Smith. And it kind of gives this, you know, off-putting dichotomy.
Just because we black, we still in your shit? What?
Look at your shirt.
Why don't you sing us a little Reba song?
Reba.
Sing your favorite.
Okay, this is actually kind of funny.
So I'm a strong black woman.
Strong? Yeah, because she's not black.
Yes.
What you gonna do? What you gonna do?
That ain't no Reba song.
It's from her mixtape.
Okay, ended on a good joke. Ended on a decent joke, anyway. That looks terrible, and I'm not going to watch it.
It looks terrible, but I'm not going to watch it either.
Yeah. All right, Ruli, think of an outro song while I do this. Dear listener, thank you so very much for joining us. Please always remember that any and all views expressed in the podcast are representative solely of the person expressing them, not their friends, family, co-hosts, or co-workers, and certainly not employers, past, present, or future. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for expecting our individuality. Ruli, what are we going out on?
We can do Dracula, since I talked about Rob Zombie, or the Halloween theme. You can pick either one of those.
Wait, what was the first one?
The Dracula.
Dragula?
Yeah.
All right. Do I know this song?
Yeah, you know this song. Everyone knows this song.
Allegedly. Okay, we're going out on Dragula.
See, this dude must know how to make horror movies. Look at all this ridiculousness.
I mean, this is ridiculous. This looks better than the Munsters movie he made a year ago.
I love the Munsters movie so badly.
Did you watch it?
Yes, I did.
Aw, that's so sweet.
It was a thing.
Okay, man. Well, hey, we won't be back next week. I'll get to see you soon. But then I guess we probably won't be back the week after that because we fucking land on Wednesday. I don't know if you'll be done driving by Wednesday. So I'm not sure if we're ready to podcast on Thursday. So it might be a couple of weeks till we talk to Dear Listener again.
We'll figure it out.
Okay, I'll start taking all my notes over all the roguelites. I'll prepare it for all the QQ reviews. It's going to be great. You're going to rue the day you encourage me to do this.
I will be completely unprepared and have a great time and have fun.
Status quo. Oh, hey, I do know this song.
Everyone knows this song.
Until next time, dear listener, burn with the QQ itches. Shut up.
I just got bored. Everybody out.